Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
By thegamereviews.com and now part of the Unified Gamers Network, you're listening to Big Red Potion, the podcast that always picks Ken. Or Ryu. As ever, I'm your compulsory host, Sinan Kubber, staff writer and associate editor for The Game Reviews, and if I sound a little bit raspy, that's because I've been suffering with what I think is becoming a flu this weekend, but never mind, I'll carry on anyway. So once again, taking up his place in the second chair is TGR Previews director Joseph D'Elia, the man who puts the crack into Crackdown. So, Joe, every time I logged onto my 360 this weekend, I've seen you playing Bionic Commando. So I'm forced to ask you, Joe, how's it been swinging?
Very radly and with plenty of manlocks. It's actually a really fun, awesome game that I'm really enjoying a lot. That, and I've been spending the other half of my time playing Punch-Out, which is also a really awesome, fun game that I've been enjoying a lot. So it's been a good weekend, honestly. How was your? You were on a podcast this weekend, a different one, right?
Yes, no, it was the same one as last time. I did the Cranky Gamers UK.net podcast with Toz, and that's gone up now. So if you go to that website, it's all there, where you can see my sort of early raspiness, which has now become this kind of raspiness. So maybe if I do a podcast on Monday, I'll be full blown raspiness. So that'd be cool. But anyway, we should probably crack on because we've got a kind of limited time today. So in this week's episode, we're going to be talking about Hollywood's effect on narrative in video games. But before we get on to talking about that, I should introduce our A-list guests, who are unbefitting of our B-movie podcast. So first up on the red carpet is Christos Reed, author of the Plot Holes column for Gamernode. Christos has also written for IGN UK and Gamers with Jobs in the past, and has recently taken to podcasting himself, Gamernode's Versus Node podcast. And he told me just before the show that he's just graduated with, I'm not sure of the result yet, but must be a relief to have graduated, Christos.
Definitely. And probably even more of a relief never to look at a Penguin Classics book again.
I think we've all had that kind of sense of relief at some stage, at some point of our education. So, pleasure to have you on the show, Christos. And
thank you very much.
You're welcome. Our second guest today is Kyle Orland. Kyle's bio is full of star quality. He's written for the likes of Joystick Game Daily, Electronic Gaming Monthly, and GameSpot, as well as having penned the Wii for Dummies book. And he's now a staff writer for Crispy Gamer. So, Kyle, welcome to Big Red Potion.
Thanks. I'm not sure I can be here, though, because I sometimes pick M. Bison.
Oh,
is that cool. Okay?
Yeah, we might have to edit that out for the podcast. But,
okay.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Kyle.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Excellent. Okay, so it's probably time to ditch all those Hollywood analogies and references and get on to some actual discussion about the influence of movies on video games. We're going to be asking whether the Hollywood model for narrative in video games is a good or bad thing, whether too many games are sticking to conventional plots and forms of storytelling that don't suit the medium, or whether actually it's a good thing and it's starting to help the medium to find its own way to tell a story. So before we get onto those questions, as ever with the show, we're going to be starting things off with a little bit of a look back on time, a little bit of a retrospective, and ask our guests which games have evolved narrative for video games, which ones have been the most significant in taking the medium forward. So I'll start with Christos. Christos, which game do you think has been the most important for evolving narrative in video games?
I think there's been quite a wide variety, but my personal two favourites are quite weird examples. My first example is probably going to throw you a bit. I'm actually going to say the Super Mario games, which is probably a bit of a shock. But the reasoning behind that is that in Super Mario, you are allowed to run from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. And you know that if you keep running to the right side of the screen, there's a princess there. The story is fairly simplistic as such, but you're never given the option to go back. There is no sandbox universe. Even Mario Galaxy makes it very, very obvious where you're supposed to be going the whole time. And I think moving away from games where there was a dramatis personae of 50 people or more and the storyline played out over 10 discs and 300 hours, I just think it helped move the medium forward a lot, definitely. And Final Fantasy titles, mainly because they're enjoyable simply for the fact that they're completely ridiculous.
There's two kind of polar opposites, really, the Super Mario Brothers series and Final Fantasy. Either one wasn't expecting Super Mario Brothers. I mean, can you kind of go into a bit more detail? Like, what is it particularly about Super Mario Brothers in terms of... Because you're saying it's just that it shelved, it got rid of all the other kind of things that we associate with a story and just kept things simple. Is that what you're arguing, or am I getting it wrong?
Basically, yeah. It's just, it's narrative minimalism. It's the woman in the tower and the noble knight that goes through the land, but with odd quirks. For example, he's a plumber and he's running through a universe made of fungi, which to me sounds more like a Saturday afternoon jaunt through North London. But
excellent. Okay, so Carl, what would you say has been the important game for evolving narrative in the medium?
Well, I've got two picks as well. One that's more classic and one that's a little more recent. The first one, I would say, is Space Invaders, actually, because I'm going to steal from Margaret Robertson's talk at the Game Developers Conference, actually, but she put pretty succinctly that Space Invaders has the whole story right there in the title. It's Space Invaders. All you need to know is right there in two words. They're coming down to get you, you know? They're invading, and implicit in that, you have to stop them. That's it. That's all you need for the story. No cutscenes, no even running left to right. You just got it all there. The second one that really made an impression on me is Metal Gear Solid, especially the first one, because that's, you know, Final Fantasy VII had a grand sweeping story, and it kind of went over the top with it in, you know, the usual Japanese way. But Metal Gear Solid really seemed to be trying to get a down-to-earth, you know, standard Battlefield narrative and really deliver it well with good voice acting and actually really dramatic characters that I really cared about. And it kind of fell off the rails with the later ones in the series and got way too indulgent in those cutscenes, I think. But the first one will always stick with me for showing me that you can weave a movie-like narrative into a game and neither one of them has to suffer.
Yeah, we'll certainly get onto Metal Gear Solid later on in the discussion. But Super Mario Brothers and Space Invaders, I was hedging my bets on Half-Life and Bioshock coming up. So, Joe,
those are boring. Anyone
I know.
Can say that.
I know.
We got to bring the big guns.
Joe, please deliver on something that I had prepared for, because otherwise I'm screwed.
Okay, sure. Half-Life has a great narrative. It's very important. Yeah, I mean, the way that Valve kind of crafted this first-person narrative where you never leave the character's head, you're controlling everything, you get to look and see exactly what's going on around you. It never pulls you out of the experience to tell you the story. It actually just has the story happen in front of and around you for you to be a part of. And I think that's, Valve storytelling has always been excellent, in my opinion anyway, and I think that the way they defined their unique brand of storytelling in the original Half-Life, and then of course evolved it in Half-Life 2, really set a standard in the industry. And the other one I want to say was the old LucasArts adventure games, which instead of focusing on just a plot or, you know, a very boring narrative, they instead focused on the characters and building these really likable, enjoyable, funny characters that you really wanted to play as because they were so great. And each and every one of them has their own little quirks and unique parts that make them all special and them all worth playing. And even to this day, I mean, I never played Day of the Tentacle until about 6 months ago, and when I played it, I absolutely loved it because Hoagie's awesome and all the characters are great and the gameplay still holds up. So I think that their, you know, character focus and their humor really let them stand out as far as other games at the time.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, certainly I'd have pointed to the LucasArts titles as well. I mean, the one I'm going to go with is a bit unconventional, actually, because it's not necessarily evolved narrative yet, but I think it's going to, is Braid. I mean, I know of all the negativity surrounding the inclusion of text in that game, similar to what happened with Lost Odyssey, but I just think it did something a bit different with the way that it tried to make the the narrative implicit rather than explicit, and you kind of making this metaphorical gameplay where and kind of the whole game was a metaphor for the story, and that's just really interesting to me. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of games trying to do similar stuff to that, but maybe it's not evolved it yet, and maybe it's not going to, so that's a bit of a dodgy answer. But so I know you've brought up Space Invaders and Super Mario Brothers, which obviously are games pre-cutscenes, pre-anything, really, is really two very old games. Which other games kind of before the Final Fantasy VII Metal Gear Solid era would you guys say stand out narrative-wise? What would you say, Carl?
The one that stuck with me that when I thought of this question was Super Metroid. When basically the story doesn't play out much in the middle, but except through the gameplay. But at the beginning and the end, you've got these short narrative sequences where you're actually playing through the sequence. You walk through the halls and you see the corpses on the ground and the shattered things, and you fight. You have that big fight with Ridley, and he takes the last Metroid, and then at the end, when you're actually escaping from, spoiler alert, you're actually escaping from the planet, and you have to get out before the destruct sequence goes off. It's being able to play through it, I think, was the most revolutionary thing for me at the time. And
absolutely. I actually played through Super Metroid about a decade after it came out, and it still really stuck out as just being a very ahead of its time and very cool.
Yeah, me too. I kind of got stuck in it the first time I played through it, and then I played. I actually got the guide out and figured out why I was stuck 10 years later, and it was totally worth it.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a kind of strange one, but I think it's worth mentioning. I don't know if you guys have played Out of This World or Another World if you're in Europe, but that did some really interesting stuff back in 1991 when it came out on PC. And spoiler, in case you have not beaten it and you want to. But first of all, it had 3D character models back when everything was still using incredibly simplistic 2D sprites. They put some really immersive environments into this game. Your character basically gets zapped to an alien world, and he has to escape. And while he's running around, he discovers this other alien who becomes his friend, just because they were both captured at the same time, and they help each other escape. And they never talk to each other. There's no talking in the game. There's no dialogue. It's all silent, except for a couple of pieces of text that pop up every now and then. But these two characters kind of get this bond going, even though they can't talk to each other, they can't communicate at all. But they both have a common goal, and they come together, they help fight the other aliens, even though the alien friend is actually fighting his fellow aliens. He does it for you because he realizes that you and him have this kind of bond going. And the story is actually really involving, and they do some interesting things with it, where your buddy will be in trouble and you have to save him and risk your own life to do so. And at the end, your character actually ends up getting shot to save your alien buddy from falling off a cliff. And the alien gets up, kills the aliens that hurt you, picks you up, and drags you off basically into the sunset to end the game, which is really, for a 1991 PC game with no dialogue, it really kind of told a very interesting narrative that really stuck with me at the time and still does to this day. And I think that game in particular is worth mentioning.
Yeah, I mean, I was... when you were describing it, I didn't think you were going to say at the end no dialogue. That really caught me off guard. So I don't know if I missed that at the beginning, but there's so much story from a game that doesn't have any words. That's incredible.
Sounds a bit like Ico when you describe it that way. Absolutely. I've never played it, but that's immediately what came to mind.
Yeah, you can't directly interact with the character's name is Buddy the Alien. You can't interact with him directly, but he will constantly be running with you, shooting things for you, and there are certain points where you have to run over to him to help him do stuff, even though you're not actually directly controlling it.
That's an excellent choice. Okay, Christos, round us off. What's your choice?
My personal choice is only 11 years old, actually, but it's still one of my personal favourites for video game narrative, and that's Grim Fandango. Simply because it's such a beautifully done game. It plays like something out of, old French film noir, and it's got this sort of Mexican Aztec element in the way that the characters are animated. And I just think it was such a fantastic game because the storyline dealt so closely with death while in true LucasArts style still being so hilariously funny. And I think it really demonstrated the sort of amazing storytelling ability of Tim Schafer. And also the ability of LucasArts to produce games that were great that weren't based around the Star Wars franchise. I think the concept of basing a narrative over 4 years and having each year on a different disc, or in this case, I think it was a disc A and a disc B, and you alternated between the two, was a brilliant way of spreading out the narrative. The environments were really believable. And I just think it was one of those few games that I would have really, really liked to see as a film.
Yeah, there's been a resurgence, really, of point-and-click games now, with Telltale Games doing all the stuff on PC and Wii. So it's interesting kind of to have that look back, where you mentioned LucasArts, and Monkey Island was such an important game in so many ways. And it's great to see the genre still living on. I was going to mention Dragon's Lair, and I'm sort of... I'm just not sure. I feel like that's kind of influenced quite a lot in its own way by cinematics and animation, and I'm not sure it's necessarily a valid choice. But it's interesting that in the games we brought up, that we've had Metal Gear Solid, Final Fantasy VII, and Grim Fandango, which all have their own cinematic influences. Like you're saying, Grim Fandango, the film noir, was very prevalent in that game. And then we've got such bizarre choices, which I totally caught me off guard, like Super Mario Brothers and Space Invaders, and games which I don't think many people would have thought of as having a narrative. And it's interesting to sort of bring us into the main discussion this week about whether the Hollywood model for video games is actually a good or a bad thing. Because I think there's a lot of cynicism and a lot of ill feeling towards games which have very strong cinematics and Hollywood influences. But I'm just wondering if there's a bit more to it than saying games should have their own way of telling a story. So really, if we talk about certain games which have been recently praised for having cinematic quality, I'm thinking Heavenly Sword, Uncharted, Grand Theft Auto 4, Metal Gear Solid 4, games which had, you know, very strong cutscenes. When you I'll put it to Christos first. When you played any of those games or all those games or whatever, how did you feel about the cutscenes? Did they stand out as helping the narrative, or did you feel like maybe it could have been done a different way?
I think it depends, really. From game to game, sometimes I felt like I was quite relieved to have control taken away from me just to show me something specific that I would have missed otherwise. And then there were games where I got quite frustrated with cutscenes because I felt like they could have just done it there and then. Mass Effect would probably be my best example, simply because they had a lot of cutscenes that took control away from the player, which was quite bizarre and unnecessary, because in a lot of game environments it was very linear. There was no sandbox environment, and every sort of dungeon-esque area ended in a wall and a narrow corridor. So I felt sometimes that it was unnecessary to cut to a cutscene and then a lot of heavy dialogue when I wouldn't have missed it anyway. I wouldn't have missed that explosion simply because I couldn't possibly actually look anywhere else.
It's interesting, Mass Effect, because in some ways the cutscenes in that game are interactive with your dialogue choices. So
yeah.
How did you feel about that sense of it, the interactive dialogue?
I really loved the conversation wheel. I thought that it was an ingenious way to sort of bring around control to the player in a way of dialogue, especially for the Paragon choices and the Renegade choices. It was the classic good and evil dialogue, but sometimes I wish they'd mix it up a bit. I found that if you often went to the right side of the conversation wheel, it would be a good answer, and the left side of the conversation wheel would be a bad answer. And I think that made it a bit too predictable. It would have been nice to mix it up and have a bit more unpredictability, a la Mass Effect 2, where we're not completely sure whether Shepard has actually made it through into the sequel, though I'm hoping he does, otherwise I'll charge BioWare for every one of those 50 hours that I spent playing him up.
I didn't get too far in Mass Effect before moving on, but I did like the conversation tree there, that it gives you some interaction with the environment, and that's really the key, I think. When a game takes away control from you to just show you a cutscene, at least 9 times out of 10, I get really, really frustrated with it. Usually because the cutscenes in these games are not very good. Even when you compare them to bad TV shows or movies, they just don't stand up as far as storytelling goes. And it's a shame, because games can do so much more than movies can. They've kind of gotten in this way since, I guess, Final Fantasy VII and Metal Gear Solid, where they think, oh, we have to be movie studios in addition to game studios. We can have the game, but we need to put in these big cutscenes that should tell you a great movie story too, except they don't have the resources of Hollywood, with no matter how many voice actors they throw in or how many big CGI effects they have. The writing is usually flat, and the timing is just almost always off. And when the few games that do it well can make it work, but for the most part, I think we should just give up and try and tell the story through the game. Games like Portal or BioShock, to an extent, that actually have the narrative in the environment and in the gameplay. Are really the way to go, I think, for games, and it can be so much better than a movie can. Why are we trying to do what movies do better when we have something that movies can't do that we should be focusing on? I think the industry is starting to come around to that way of thinking with the latest generation. Cutscenes have kind of lost their wow, it's an animated cutscene. Back when CDs were new, they did it just because they could. Now it's getting tired a little bit, and people are thinking of new ways to do it.
Sure, I mean, I've just come off the back of playing Lost Odyssey, which is full of very poor cutscenes. And you mentioned budget, and I was thinking the budget showed in that game in that there was limited CGI, and the cutscenes that were in the game's engine were so poor because you had the characters rotating strangely, as they tend to do in Japanese RPGs whenever they move, and not necessarily the dubbing mixing up with what you're seeing on the screen. And I completely agree in that. When I played Final Fantasy X, I was completely wowed by the cutscenes in that, and it's just, 6 years later, and I'm rather underwhelmed.
It's not even necessarily a matter of quality, too. If it's a good game that I enjoy playing, I don't want to sit there for a half hour and watch a story just so I can play more. I want to be able to play the game, and if it's a bad game, a good story is not going to save it if the gameplay is the thing.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. I mean, it's getting increasingly frustrating. Every game has so much, non-interactive pieces to it. And now the last couple years, the big thing is, as long as we throw some QTE segments in there, it's all fine. That people can watch these cool explosions and not get aggravated that they're not actually doing any of this stuff. But, I mean, does anyone really enjoy doing QTEs anymore? I mean, they're kind of incredibly aggravating sometimes. But I was actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Comic-Con, and one of the developers of the Wolverine game said, we were making all these cutscenes for the Wolverine game. We were going to put in all these cool sequences as, QTEs, and then one of our developers was just like, hey, why are we doing this? This is a video game. We shouldn't have these stupid, barely interactive segments. We should actually have people playing these things. So they reworked all the sequences that were going to be QTEs, and they made them into controllable action sequences, which I haven't, unfortunately, not played the Wolverine game yet, but I'm really interested to see. They showed one at the moment where Wolverine jumps his helicopter and does all these crazy things on the helicopter, and it is stuff that you would normally see in a QTE, but they had these simplistic controller motions that were actually doing all these cool actions, and that is a cool way to do it. That's the way cutscenes should be handled more often than not.
Sure. It makes me think of Tomb Raider Underworld, if anyone's played that at all, the way it handled some of its QTE-like things, which was actually to kind of give the player total control but slow down the scene.
Right.
So, I think it worked to some extent in that, but I do agree there is a prevalence of quick time events in games. But I don't know whether I necessarily damn the cutscene. And I think there are some games which it's worked in. And we talked about Heavenly Sword last week, and I felt that the quality of the cutscene was very strong in that game. Even though, like Carl was saying, a good story doesn't necessarily save a bad game, I actually think that to some extent in that game the story did save it. It was a very bad game, and the only reason I kept playing it was to find out more about the story.
See, I felt the opposite. I felt it was a very bad game, and I didn't really get gripped by the story much at all. Not that I played the whole way through, because the story doesn't save the bad gameplay. So
sure.
I just kind of stopped in the middle there. Even if the the delivery was good, the presentation was good, but the actual story behind it, felt very cliche to me.
Actually, I'm gonna retry that. I actually just really like the character in that game rather than necessarily the story. So and we talked about this again last week, and how we mentioned it was
strange. There is a difference.
Yeah, there is. There
between
is
the character and the story. I could see that.
Sure. What would you say, Chris? Do you say it's fair to say that interactive storytelling? Well, I guess we're talking about Half-Life. In the best example, is that better than a cinematic cutscene?
I suppose it's just a case of personal preference. For me, I absolutely adore the Half-Life games. I think the fact that I can either watch Dog the Robot have a massive battle with a Strider, or I can stare at a pebble in the river below them, is just a fantastic degree of choice, really. I think it's very clever in the way that Valve will restrict your viewing during serious events and make sure you focus on what you're supposed to be focusing on. I think there was a very good example at the beginning of, I believe it was either the beginning of Half-Life 2 Episode 1 or 2, where Dog puts Alex Vance and Gordon Freeman in a van and throws them across this massive chasm. I thought it was very clever, because when you get in vehicles in the Half-Life games, your view is restricted to what's in front of you, what's to the right of you, and what's to the left of you. And in front of you is the big chasm, to the right of you is Alex Vance, and to the left of you is Dog. And I thought it was a really brilliant way of making sure you focused on what was happening and you knew what was going on without making it horrendously boring.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, again, to say spoiler, but at the end of episode 2 as well, there's an incredible scene which it was important that they restricted control away from you, where you're watching Alex's father get murdered, which was it was superbly done. And I think it made me think of something we talked about last week again, the Call of Duty 4 opening, where you're in the car and the view of the president, and you have the option to look, you know, to your left or to your right or behind you, and you can see the different chaoses unfurling. And it actually made me play that scene a good 3 or 4 times so I could try and get in everything that was going on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I actually prefer the Valve style of letting you control everything you can. And I also like how in Half-Life 2 they give you the zoom in option. You can zoom in on whatever you want to get a better look at things, even though it's not essential to the actual gameplay. It does give you a little bit more control of the cutscenes. You can kind of make your own camera angle as you watch stuff. But yeah, I think the way they do things in even in Portal, how that, you know, the story is kind of just happening around you, and you could choose to, you know, listen to everything GLaDOS says. You could find the Rat Boy dens and see that little side tale part of the story. But, you know, basically there's no cutscenes in that game, and you know, it just all happens while you're doing your actual actions. And I like the way they do that. And even in Left 4 Dead, which is a multiplayer based shooter with not much story, but I was listening to one of the Valve guys talk about it, and they said, you know, they scripted this very long book about how the infection happened and how all these people met and what they did before. All that stuff is written. They're just not actually going to tell you any of it. They'll give you hints through the dialogue. They'll give you hints through the scrawled out messages on all the walls of the safe houses. They'll throw you hints here and there, but they'll never actually just give you a cutscene that says, here, this is exactly what happened before Left 4 Dead. And I think that's a really great way of you know, putting having a universe and putting you into the story without forcing you to watch this 15-minute unnecessary explanation of everything.
And the important thing about all these games, I think, is that not just that they let you keep control and, oh, you can look around while you're going down the Jeep in Call of Duty 4, that's nice, but the thing is that it doesn't take you away from your viewpoint. If you're spending, you know, the whole of the gameplay in your eyes and looking through at being this character, and then in the cutscene the camera pans out and you see yourself through the camera lens, that's just jarring to me. I prefer it with games like Portal, you know, all the Valve games really, where they keep you in that point of view the whole time. Why would they ruin that with the cutscenes? I just don't understand it a lot of the time.
Absolutely. Even in Fallout 3, which, I mean, the story of that game wasn't amazingly told, but you're always in that character's eyes. You're always, you know, it's such an immersive game. If they did pull you out of that character to do something crazy in a cutscene, it would be, as you said, very jarring and unnecessary.
Yeah, commit to it. And if it's a third-person game, you know, keep it in that third-person style. That's one of the things that really pissed me off about Mirror's Edge, is that, you know, you had this great first-person viewpoint during the gameplay, and then for some of the cutscenes, they transferred to this weird flash animation 2D type thing, whereas if you could play these cutscenes, you know, from the same point of view, and which you do occasionally during the chapters, it was much more affecting to me.
Yeah, I totally agree about Mirror's Edge. I think it was a flawed attempt to be stylistic, really, with that game. It fell flat. Say, for example, with Metal Gear Solid 4, which has its highs and lows of its narrative, I think the best high of it, and actually probably my favourite moment from the whole of last year, was the scene, again, spoilers, the scene where Snake is crawling through the that room, and I can't remember exactly why he's doing it, but you're having to press X to make him crawl along and get through this furnace, essentially, and he's slowly being worn down. You're thinking he's in his last moments, and of course you're frantically pressing X, even if it doesn't really matter how fast, how quick you're pressing it. I didn't really try to press it slowly or whatever, but it felt like a really unique moment, and one of the Kojima genius moments where you felt like you were in the cutscene. And I think that, you know, there's so many cinematic influences, obviously, with the Metal Gear Solid games, and I think sometimes he's the one who's bringing the cohesion between the two. What do you guys think?
Well, how many hours of movie did you have to watch to get to that crawling part?
That would be my argument. It's a very fair argument.
Against that game.
Sure. But again, with that one moment, I think in some ways it maybe wasn't worth it, but it was still a spectacular moment.
Yeah, it has its moments. Like, I remember even in the first Metal Gear Solid, the torture scene where you're trying to hold out for the torture, and, you know, that had been spoiled for me before I got there, because I knew if you wanted the good ending, you had to get through the torture without submitting to it. But the fact where he says, you know, there's no game overs, there's no continues, and, you know, I didn't know when the scene was coming, so I hadn't saved for, I don't know, maybe the last 2 hours. So I was really, you know, am I going to submit, or am I going to lose 2 hours of gameplay? I'm going to have to do this all over again. That was kind of personally affecting, because, you know, it's my time.
My personal thought on the Metal Gear Solid series was the brilliant way in which Kojima decided to break the fourth wall. I believe it was it Psycho Mantis with all the controller kerfuffles?
Yeah,
he read your memory card. You had to plug the controller into a different socket. I don't know about you, but that and Eternal Darkness, where you would see the volume turning up and down your TV, and I don't know about you, but that was the exact copy of my TV's volume display. So that scared the living crap out of me. But I just think it's a brilliant way to tell a story. I do think the cutscenes, and I haven't actually played it. I was working in the IGN offices when they were doing the review, and I remember it arrived in a big shiny silver box, and they all got very excited, and they ran into the game testing room, and they didn't come out for a very long time. But you notice when they do come out, they didn't really look like they'd been doing anything. And it got to the point of the GDC keynote with Hideo Kojima, and he actually started taking the mickey out of the fact that his cutscenes were so monstrously long. I just think that it depends really what you wanted from Metal Gear Solid 4. If you wanted some brilliant storytelling, then I suppose you would get it through the cutscenes. But if you're very, very gameplay focused, then I suppose it would throw you a bit. Braid for me threw me with the random story text, mainly because I didn't have a clue what was going on.
It was a bit too self-indulgent for me. I could see at points what he was trying to do to weave it back into the gameplay, but by the end, I had no idea what he was trying to say. Maybe one of you can explain it. I don't
know. I'm certain none of us can explain it. I'm certain the only person who can explain it is Jonathan Blow, and even then, I don't think we necessarily understand it. So, the thing with Braid, I think it was. If it had been more compromising with its gameplay and to some extent with the implicitness of its story, this is a big thing he talks about, the implicitness versus explicitness of, say, something like Half-Life, which I think is actually unfair against Half-Life, I think, especially in the first game, you're really unraveling the story. But I think there was something in... It just felt like a very big puzzle, and even though I didn't necessarily get that puzzle or will ever get that puzzle, I enjoyed trying to solve it, and... For me, that's why that game is one of my favourite games of last year. Just wanted to get on, because we're coming towards the end, really, onto the thought of giving the player control of the story, because this is kind of the theme you guys are all bringing up with cutscenes, that they remove control. Do you think that games are in a place, and in some way gamers are in a place where they can be given enough control of the story, so say something like with Fallout 3 or Far Cry 2, that we can really trust the player to tell a good story and to weave a story that's worthy of being told? What do you guys think?
When I was writing my first column for Gamernode, I chose Fallout 3 as my medium, and I was writing about player-controlled narratives. And I recounted a particularly horrifying experience where I was hanging around in Megaton, as you do, and I went to the bar, I met a guy that said he'd like me to blow the town up, and I thought that was a little immoral, so I said no. And I went to the sheriff and I said, hey, do you know there's this guy in your bar and he's going to blow up your town? So he runs in, and the guy calmly stands up and shoots the sheriff. And I then had to go to the sheriff's house while wearing one of the sheriff's items of clothing, because it had better armor than mine did, and explain to his now orphaned son that I'd accidentally got him shot because I was trying to play the good guy. And obviously the second I left the boy's house, I thought, oh, maybe I could fix things, maybe I could make it so this little kid isn't heartbroken and somehow living in a house unsupervised. And I looked up and the autosave symbol came up and I thought, well, damn, I'm possibly the most unreliable storyteller in the history of the video game industry.
I think the ability of a game to let you have that experience is really key. It's not just letting the gamer do whatever they want. You know, if I could tell a story with whatever I want, I would just write it. But they're giving you the characters and the environment. It's a dual authorship almost. They are really giving you the set pieces, and if it's robust enough, you can do a lot with it. Most of the time these days, it's just, are you good or are you evil? And that's a start. But I think as games get more complex, and Fallout 3 is kind of showing the way here, is you can actually have dynamic consequences to what you do. And I think that really is the future of sure. Of game design. Even if the gamer does something that they might have not intended, or that it might not have been as gripping a story as if you'd gone the other way, or not as interesting as someone else playing it because you're not as original, I guess, it's still better because it's personal, it's yours, it's something that no one else can experience, and it makes it unique.
Sure, I mean, this is something Clint Hocking, the guy behind Far Cry 2, and Steve Gaynor, who's working on Bioshock 2, this is something they've been pushing forward. I mean, are you saying that there hasn't necessarily been a game that has actually done that particular function well enough yet?
They're starting to. I mean, a lot of them are really, I feel, too simple in that you're good or you're evil, or, you know, you're 50 points good, and people will react to you as if, oh, you're 50 points good. But they're starting to weave these situations like the one Christos talked about in Fallout 3, where it's really, you know, surprising consequences to your actions. And the more and more, I think we're going to see that. Fallout 3 has had enough of an impact, both critically and sales-wise, that I think people are going to follow that. It's a lot more work to make a game like that, as anyone at Bethesda, I'm sure, will tell you, who's been working on it the past 4 years. But the payoff is so obvious that I hope the industry is going to start tilting in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, we've been seeing the evolution of the sandbox gameplay over the past couple of years, and I guess the sandbox storyline is what has to come next, and that just kind of let us go in there and evolve our own type of thing. The game I was thinking about again, we mention this every single week, and David Cage better give us a plot, something after all this, but Heavy Rain is kind of doing that. I mean, they're dropping you into this world, and the characters that are there, the characters you get to play as, can either live or die by your hand, and then the storyline will continue no matter what happens. If you kill a character, it'll keep going, you'll control a different character, and then that's it. And I think it's a very interesting way to do it. As we've said a couple times now, we don't really know how that's going to turn out, but if it does turn out well, and that's a very exciting thing as far as narrative and gaming, and you know, how things can evolve based on the player's decisions throughout the experience.
But there's obviously a lot of cinematic influence of that game, because it's basically one giant cutscene.
Yeah, pretty much. But in the way that it's kind of an interactive movie. It's basically the same as Sewer Shark was on Sega CD, but evolved to such a way that it would be, you know, a little bit more interactive. And I know that I heard that everything in the game is QTEs, but it still is something different, something new, and it could do something good if it actually turns out to be as good as they're saying it's going to be.
The video is a little less grainy than Sewer Shark as well, from what I understand.
I would hope so.
But that's a big help.
Not enough dog meat, though, unfortunately. So, basically what we're all asking now is the question of whether or not games are being too influenced by Hollywood, whether or not designers are looking more at the standard Hollywood model instead of carving their own type of, you know, unique experience that fits the game. So I wanted to know what you guys thought. Do you think that games are taking too much influence from the way that movies are presented, the way that the stories in movies are told, or do you think that there's kind of a healthy balance between unique, different storytelling ideas or and Hollywood storytelling ideas in gaming?
My personal favorite example of a game that's so Hollywood-inspired it's slightly nauseating is Gears of War 2. And I love it simply because all the characters are completely predictable. I know everything about Marcus Fenix from 5 minutes in. You could not, you know, quote me one line from Cole that I didn't already see coming, mainly because if you've watched, you know, 10 minutes into a Chris Rock stand-up, you probably heard the guy's entire vocabulary. Just all the characters are really predictable. We all knew they were going to save the day in the variety of ways that they have in the first game and the second. But it was comforting, in a sense, to know that I was playing a game where I knew these characters well enough that their decisions were predictable. So I wasn't going to be thrown off guard. I wasn't going to dislike the characters because I thought they were doing something immoral. I just thought it was a good gaming experience. I think the only video game title I think that gets slapped with a Hollywood label a lot, even in a positive way that I don't really think deserves it, is Grand Theft Auto 4. Because to me, the cutscenes were not really Hollywood. The cutscenes were actually quite gritty. I'm sure Sinan can identify with sort of living in London. People from Nico's area of the world are very present. And I think it really did a good job to sort of veer away from stereotypes, replicate every culture very accurately. There were no stereotypes that I found offensive, a la, you know, Cole and Gears of War. But I just thought those two games were very opposite ends of the scale, but I still enjoyed them both immensely.
Actually, one of the things I wrote about recently was the idea of Grand Theft Auto returning to London, because I think that the landscape of London, especially recently, over the last sort of 10 years since Grand Theft Auto was launched, it suits the game now. That we've got such a multi-ethnic culture in the city. But that's a completely different tangent. So what would you say, Carl? Do you think there are too many games now being influenced by the Hollywood model?
I'm not entirely sure what that means, actually, because, you know, if you go by movie to movie in Hollywood, you can have, you know, something like The Godfather with a great family story that goes over generations, or you can have, you know, Wreck, like, I don't know, the latest Too Fast, Too Furious movie or whatever, that is incredibly formulaic. And it's the same way with games. There are plenty of games that have very carefully crafted characters and structures that come out through humor and witty writing. I've been trying to play through Valkyria Chronicles on the PS3, and it's just a very touching tale of a simple pastoral life thrown apart by war. And the characters are just so great, and the translation and the voice acting, it's just really affecting. And then you have something like Gears of War 2, which was mentioned, and It's entirely formulaic, like most Hollywood movies, I guess, it would be the stereotype, and you can find that comforting, I guess, or personally, I find it a little boring. I'd rather, you know, get back to shooting things if the story is just going to be that predictable and the characters are going to be that much of ciphers. Why bother, really? If I know what's going to happen, let's just assume that I know it and skip the cutscene.
So, I mean, the thing I'd argue is, like you said, it for some people it's comforting, and that group of some people is quite a large group. It's those games that follow those kind of formulaic action movie sort of things. They're the ones that sell, like Halo 3 and Gears of War 2. Those are the games that have sold them on the 360 the most. So,
And you can't argue with success, I know, but I'm going to try.
Okay, so I'm looking at the time, and I think we better get to our last question, which I quite like. So, one word answer from each of our guests, and Joe as well. Do you guys think the non-interactive cutscene, the Kojima benchmark cutscene, will that ever die, or will it always have some form in video games? So, Christos, yes or no?
No.
Kyle?
No, it'll get less popular, but it'll always be the lazy way out.
Joe, be controversial, say yes.
Yes!
Excellent.
But, what date? When exactly will it die?
2015.
All right. Mark
the Marty McFly coast forward. Paints the future.
We'll have to come back and look at that. I suspect it won't, but there you go. Okay, so a bit of a short episode, but I still think that was a good one. So let's quickly say our thanks to Kyle and Christos. That was good fun to be part of. So, Kyle, do you want to make any plugs or shout-outs for some sites you work for? I know Crispy Game is going through some changes at the moment.
Yeah, come in about a week. Come back and see crispygamer.com. We're going to have lots of exciting stuff there for E3 week, including possibly a new look. Maybe.
Possibly.
So yeah, crispygamer.com, and we've got our own podcast over there, Blazing Prattles. You can find it on iTunes, and kyleorland.com if you want to read any more of my old stuff, I guess.
Very cool.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Kyle. Christos, how about you? I know GamerNode as well is going through some changes as well after it's had a bit of a server calamity.
Definitely. GamerNode had a bit of a server crash at the moment. A lot of us have got stuff in Word, so it's all going back up, and as it's going back up and we're fixing all the links so everything will work again, you're also going to see a complete redesign from our admins, which should be good. It all looks very swish. I've been looking at the prototypes, and I will also give a quick shout out to my girlfriend, who I love very much.
And you can find more about Christos at his own website, which is forthegamergood.com. So Joe, any plugs or shout outs quickly?
No, just I would say to anyone out there who wants to play Street Fighter 4 versus Kyle Orland, don't, because he kicked my ass last time I played against him. I won 1 out of 5, so please stay far, far away if you value your battle points.
There are plenty of people who can beat me. It's not to trash talk, but I think it's more you're off.
Wow. Controversial end to the show.
I feel the same way about when I'm playing, I get beat like that. So.
Excellent stuff. Our own website's been going through some changes now at the BigRedPotion.com. So please, please, please go to our site, BigRedPotion.com. It's just gone up. It's very, very cool. I would say more, but we need to go. So just briefly, well done to the WeDS podcast. 100 episodes. Fantastic achievement. And that's it from me, Joe, Kyle, and Christos. See you next week. Bye. Thank you for listening to Big Red Potion, brought to you as part of the Game On network of podcasts from thegamereviews.com, home to unbiased thoughts from a community of gamers. You can find more about the podcast at bigredpotion.com, with links to previous shows and forum threads where you can continue the discussion. You can follow show updates through Twitter by following either myself at twitter.com/shoinan, S-H-O-I-N-A-N, or Joe at twitter.com/slamvanderhuge, slam, V-A-N-D-E-R, huge. All that's left to do is thank the man behind the theme tune, Derek K. Miller. Derek, take us out with Washing Off Like an Aardvark. And maybe my thoughts going into a show about the guests. So I really wanted to write today about Kyle and Christos, especially now that I didn't really get to do proper introductions for them on the show.
Whoa! You heard that?
Holy fuck, yes.
My house just exploded.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ.
And my girlfriend's not even around for me to blame her. Wow,
That was a lot of plates, it sounded like.
That was, I have a recycling bag.
Right.
From a nail, and I believe the nails popped out.
It was hanging from a nail.
Oh, yeah. Please, if you have this on recording, please save this moment.
I think that's going to be the
intro. Perfect ending. Perfect ending of the show.